Criminal Justice Subcommittee will come to order. Ben, please call the roll.
Chair Trino?
Here.
Vice Chair Barnaby?
Here.
Rep Rayner?
Here.
Representatives Abbott?
Here.
Baker? Brackett?
Here.
Bracy Davis?
Here.
Brannon? Casello?
Here.
Garcia? Garcia? Gottlieb?
Here.
Jock?
Here.
Michael?
Here.
Plakin?
Here.
Silvers?
Here.
Stark? Representative Tuck has been excused. Yarkowski? We have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ben. I want to remind everyone, please silence their cell phones. Also, as a reminder to our members and presenters today, turn the microphone on when you're speaking and off when you're finished. I also request that if you please fill out a public appearance card if you intend to speak before the committee today. Well, we have a lot going on today. In the consideration of time, we'll try to move along as fast as we can. Today we have 9 bills. We have PCS for HB 275, offenses involving critical infrastructure, HB 117, disclosure of grand jury testimony, HB 533, DNA samples from inmates, HB 801, Alzheimer's disease and related dementia training for law enforcement officers, HB 937, Purple Heart, HB 1131, online sting operations grant program, HB 1135, lewd or lascivious grooming, HB 1181, juvenile justice, and HB 1595, controlled substances. We'll get started with PCS for HB 275, offenses involving critical infrastructure, by Representative Kennedy. You are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Ranking Member, members. The North American Reliability Council notes that physical attacks on critical infrastructure are on the rise. Attacks on electric substations in North Carolina, Washington, South Carolina, and Oregon have left hundreds of thousands without power and water. A recent Wall Street Journal article highlighted more than 100 cases of Chinese nationals trying to access American critical infrastructure, described by U.S. officials as potential espionage threats, including several in the state of Florida. The intent of this legislation is to further protect the physical and cyber assets in our state that have connection to national security, economic security, and public health and safety. And in addition to the physical infrastructure, Florida's critical infrastructure is heavily automated, and the intrusions into those systems by cyber criminals pose substantial threats. In our bill, we utilize language that includes improperly tampers, which shows that a person must intentionally and knowingly cause or attempt to cause a significant interruption or impairment of a function of a critical infrastructure. We also define that if a person trespasses by willfully, knowingly, and intentionally gaining access to a computer system or computer network, they commit a felony of the third degree. A person who would physically tamper with or insert a computer contaminant into or otherwise transmit commands or electronic communications that cause a disruption of service delivered by critical infrastructure commits a felony of the second degree. Now, one thing that I want to make clear about this bill is that the intent is to prevent damage to critical infrastructure. We've taken steps to make sure that accidents, particularly those involving kids, for example, a young driver backing into a green box, there's nothing willful or intentional about that. We certainly hope it wouldn't happen, but we preserve prosecutorial discretion, and that intent language is clear. We're talking about intentional acts that would compromise the integrity of the facilities and infrastructure. We think this bill is important, it's proactive, and I would ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you, members. We're in questions, but we have a strike all. So anyone have a question at this point? Seeing no questions, we have an amendment, barcode PCS for HB 275A1. Representative Kennedy, you are recognized to explain your amendment.
Thank you, Chair. The amendment differs from the PCS as it defines the term linear asset as any electric distribution or transmission asset, gas distribution or transmission pipeline, communication wire lines or railway or any attachments thereto. It includes linear asset within the definition of critical infrastructure. It prohibits a person from improperly tampering with critical infrastructure if the tampering results in an interruption or impairment that costs more than $200 in labor or supplies to restore. And it prohibits a person from trespassing on a linear asset, which is punishable. It's a third-degree felony, removes specified notice and posting requirements, which removes an unintended consequence of putting a bullseye on identifying exactly what critical infrastructure is, and we want to prevent that. And it cleans up and provides some cross-referencing to define some terms like computer, computer system, computer network, and electronic device. And that is the strike all.
Thank you. Members, questions on the amendment? Questions? Seeing no questions, we have public testimony. We have Adam Basford. Proponent wishes to appear. You are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll just take a second to say how grateful we are for this good bill. The infrastructure that a lot of the Florida businesses in this state are taking care of and managing are critical to what we do as Floridians. And making sure that they are not the subject of an attack is incredibly important. So we're so thankful that Representative Kennedy has taken this issue on. And thank you for listening to us and working on some changes to make it even better. So we would really appreciate your favorable support here. And thank you for protecting Florida's infrastructure and businesses.
Thank you. Seeing no more public testimony, remember, we are in debate on the bill, on the amendment. Debate. Seeing no debate, Representative Kennedy, you're recognized to close on your amendment.
We have closed, Mr. Chair.
If you are in favor of adopting amendment, signify by saying yay. Any opposed? By your vote, the amendment is adopted. Back on the bill as amended. Is there any public testimony on the bill? Okay. LB Kaminsky, Charter Communications, waving in support. Tiffany Garling, Florida Chamber of Commerce, waving in support. Jennifer Pritt, Florida Police Chiefs Association, waving in support. Cayenne Corey, the Chemers Company, waving in support. Kevin Cleary, Crown Castle, waving in support. Kevin Morgan, Orlando Utilities Commission, waving in support. Ryan Matthew, Florida Municipal Electric Association, waving in support. Adam Basford, Associated Industries of Florida, waving in support. Dale Calhoun, Florida Propane Gas Association, wishes to appear. Proponent, you're recognized.
Mr. Chairman, committee, I just wanted to make a point to say last year during the spring, right before session ended, there was a full feature film that was aired or played in theaters all over the country, even here in Tallahassee, while y'all were in session. And that film was called How to Blow Up a Pipeline. There was a review by the New York Times that praised the film's sympathetic portrayal of eco-terrorism. And that points right there to the magnitude of this issue and illustrates the importance of this legislation to protect critical infrastructure. And I thank Representative Kennedy and you all for your support of this.
Thank you. Next, we have Dale Calhoun, wishes to speak. Oh, I'm sorry, same one. Barney Bishop, Florida Smart Justice Alliance, waving in support. Members, we are in debate on the bill. Seeing no debate, Representative Kennedy, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Wave close, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kennedy, having closed on her bill, Ben, please call the roll on PCS for HB 275 and announce the vote.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Baker?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Bracy Davis?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Garcia? Gottlieb?
Yes.
Jock?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Plakin?
Yes.
Rayner?
Yes.
Silvers?
Yes.
Stark?
Yes.
Representative Tuck has been excused. Yarkoski? Yes. Chair Trunow?
Yes.
16 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Show PCS for HB 275 reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, next up for consideration today is HB 533, DNA samples from inmates by Representative Fabricio. You are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Chairman, for hearing our bill. This is HB 533, an act relating to DNA samples from inmates. This is a very simple bill. Back in 2011, we started taking, and actually I think maybe even before then, we started taking DNA samples from inmates, folks who were going to be incarcerated in Florida State prisons. And there was a loophole in that statute for folks who had been incarcerated prior to that time. What this bill does is it closes a loophole and it makes sure that we're able to take DNA samples from all inmates who are incarcerated. The idea is that we'll have that DNA evidence and it could be put up into the CODIS database to be cross-referenced with other cold cases. The idea would be that this bill, if we're able to get this passed and we're able to get the DNA evidence, we may be able to close cold cases throughout the state and perhaps even throughout the nation. On the other side of the coin, it'll be of value to be able to take this DNA evidence also because other folks, like for the Innocence Project, can look at the DNA evidence for exonerating purposes if that is an option. The bill was brought to me by a member of the Hillsborough Sheriff's Department, who is actually here today, and he'll provide some public testimony about it. And you're welcome to ask him questions at that time. But this is not a lobbyist pushed bill. This was something that was brought to me by a special investigator who actually does the work to close cold cases. So I think it's a good bill, and I ask for your support. That's the bill.
Thank you. Questions on the bills, members? Ranking member, you are recognized.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. And Representative Fabricio, I appreciate you speaking to me about this yesterday on the floor. Just want to make sure on line 11, when you referenced the date, September 30th, 2024, this is not something that we as a legislature would have to come back every year and address. I just want to kind of make sure that was the only part that was a little kind of ambiguous to me.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate you bringing that up. I was looking at that closely. So the idea behind this bill is that it closes a loophole. So if everything works properly and this bill closes a loophole and all the samples that need to be taken can be taken within 1 year, then at September 30th, 2024 comes by, we've closed the loophole, we got all the samples, we're all done, and then we wouldn't need to come back. There is a discrepancy as to how many samples need to be taken. And that's a much larger issue, and I don't want to go down that rabbit hole right now. But the idea would be that we would be able to have all the samples taken by that date, and once they're all taken, they're all processed, and then the issue is resolved.
Follow up.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, and thank you so much for that that explanation. So I guess that my question would be, how do we know, is there going to be a mechanism for DOC to come back and report to us that this effectively has been done and we can move on? How do we kind of make sure that there's that accountability factor there?
That's sure. So that's a great issue, and that issue is going to be, God willing, will be resolved by a bill that I plan on bringing next year. Department of Corrections does a lot of work. They are... it is an agency that is overtasked, and it has a huge amount of work, and they do a great job doing what they do with the resources that they have. However, one of the issues that I've seen is that perhaps some of the data isn't as clear as I would like it to be, so I'll be addressing some of those issues next year with other legislation. But based on the information that we have and their ability to operate, we're moving forward with it, with this language at this time.
Representative Gottlieb, question?
Thank you, Chair, just briefly. Rep, I support the bill. As you know, we talked about it. I'm just curious, is there an appropriation to, you know, for the fiscal concerns, for the retaining and storage of this new evidence, and where's it gonna go once DOC collects it?
You're recognized.
So, Department of Corrections told me that the cost of obtaining a DNA sample from an inmate is the cost of a postage stamp. So I understand that it is a de minimis cost. I imagine if they're here today and they want to testify, I'd love to hear about it. But I'm under the understanding that it is a de minimis cost to obtain it. And then once the data is taken, and I understand it's a swab, like a cheek swab. So there's not a lot, it's not like a big kit or anything of that nature. Once the data is obtained, then it would be uploaded to the CODIS database. And that's the whole purpose of the
follow-up.
One final question, Chair. Thank you. And are you aware of any reason, just because the way you said it, I wanted to ask, are you aware of any reason that this DNA sample could not be shared with the Innocence Project or a conviction review unit?
I am not aware of any reason.
Thank you, Chair.
Questions? Seeing no more questions, we have no amendments. Is there public testimony? We have Bonnie Patterson James, representing herself, wishes to appear. You're recognized.
Good morning. We are here to discuss the important topic of collecting DNA from booked inmates versus convicted criminals. This is a topic that has sparked much debate and controversy, and it is crucial that we take the time to understand the implications of these practices. When it comes to booked inmates, there is a strong argument for collecting DNA as soon as possible. Booking a suspect into a law enforcement facility is often the first step in the criminal justice process, and collecting the DNA at this stage can help to streamline investigations and potentially solve cold cases. By capturing the DNA of all booked inmates, law enforcement can create a comprehensive database that could be an invaluable tool in solving crimes. On the other hand, the issue becomes more complex when we consider collecting DNA from innocent individuals. While many may argue that this is a necessary step in ensuring public safety, others raise valid concerns about privacy and the potential for misuse of genetic information. We must carefully consider the ethical implications of collecting DNA from innocent individuals that are booked and ensure that their rights are protected. I speak from experience, as my DNA was collected as a booked felon on May 18th, 2023. Over malicious prosecution and an overreach in charges. I could not be released until I submitted to the DNA collection because my charge was a third-degree felony for tossing 1.7 ounces of clean cotton granny panties that touched a deputy's shoe. My charge was third-degree felony battery on a Leo, which was dropped to a misdemeanor. However, my DNA is now part of the criminal database. I was also strip searched, forced to spread my cheeks and cough over malicious prosecution. In conclusion, the collection of DNA from booked inmates and convicted criminals is a complex issue that requires thoughtful consideration. We must balance the need for effective law enforcement with the protection of individual rights and privacy. I urge you to continue the conversation and consider the implication of these practices as we work towards a fair and just criminal justice system. We can do better. Thank you.
Dan Bending, Special Investigator, wishes to speak. You're recognized.
Good afternoon, Chairman, and everyone else here. I appreciate your time. And give me a few minutes to talk about this topic, which is near and dear to all cold case investigators and detectives' hearts. My name is Dan Bending. I work with the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office as a cold case investigator. The Honorable Sheriff Chad Cronister began the cold case unit in 2021 to look at all the open unsolved homicides. Prior to that, I worked 25 years with the New York City Police Department, 20 of those as a detective. My last 5 years, I worked in the cold case squad up there. Homicides occur, unfortunately, every day in this state, in every state in the union. And the best and brightest detectives that work in those respective agencies, work those cases, exhaust all leads, and try to bring closure to families and justice for the victims and bring the person that was responsible to justice. Unfortunately, some of those cases and some of those homicides and sexual assaults go unsolved. At that point, as we all know, it's become part of Americana, the word cold case. People at home every day are fascinated with cold case docuseries, documentaries, podcasts, fictionalized TV shows. But unfortunately, to these families, that they lost a loved one to a homicide that goes unsolved, when they hear the word cold case, it is truly a dagger in their heart. They know the word cold case means that every day that passes, that case, or their case in particular, goes unsolved and colder. Unfortunately, they deal with that pain. Not too far in the past, before we had any DNA science and we knew what DNA even was, detectives worked cases and had minimal evidence. They worked fingerprints, blood typing, body fluid verification, tire tracks, footprints, pictures, and would work a case in their old, with their old gumshoe detective. And thank God for them, and we never really look back at the last generation. They were smart enough to collect evidence, document the crime scene, impound it, safeguard it, and keep it for the future generation. They had no idea what DNA was. Modern, we've all heard the system known as CODIS, the Combined DNA Index Program, which evidence from every case or a lot of cases go in there, and that's how we connect subjects to the CODIS system, and hopefully there's an individual that's already in, his profile is in CODIS, and then we get a match. Sometimes there's multiple cases with unknown individuals that those evidences are brought to the system, and they match, and then we figure out that unknown people have committed multiple crimes. I'm here today because through my time in Florida and time in New York, and through my network of dealing with federal, local, and state law enforcement entities and my comrades, this issue has come up, where we get involved to an investigation and we find out that there's an inmate serving a long prison sentence or a life sentence that his DNA was never provided, even though it's a law. There's nothing done with malice with this. It was just probably out of sight, out of mind. These guys were locked away and nobody thought about it. The problem is, as every day passes, these individuals grow older, and unfortunately, in life, death catches all of us. And every time we lose an inmate without swabbing him, that is a cold case that remains unsolved. And I don't think Representative Sapricio is trying to do anything out of the ordinary. It's just filling in that loophole. Every person that every family, every loved one, every victim, and every person in the state of Florida deserves what we can give them. And fixing this loophole and providing DNA samples, which are already owed, we can possibly solve multiple cases. If we solve one case, if we free an innocent man or woman that's serving time for a case for a crime they didn't commit, it can help them too. I've seen it, and we've worked cases like that, where people have been freed because of DNA, and then we actually got the right subject, the right perpetrator. So I appreciate your time. I don't know if I started a lot, and I went over a couple things too much, but I appreciate your time. Thank you so much. Have a good day.
Thank you. Next, we have Barney Bishop waving in support. That concludes public testimony. Members, we're in debate. Anyone wishing to debate? Ranking member.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. And Rep. Fabricio, thank you for bringing this bill in our conversation. I definitely want to acknowledge the public testimony given by the young woman that came and spoke about some of the DNA concerns, but also juxtapose that with the testimony we just heard from law enforcement. And I think that what we have is something that, you know, the goals of each of theirs are not mutually exclusive, right? We want to make sure that people are protected. We want to make sure that people's DNA is protected, but we also want to make sure that cold cases can be solved. But most certainly, if people can be exonerated, we want to make sure that can happen as well. And so because of that, because of balancing those two interests, I will be up on this bill today and look forward to working with you to hopefully make sure that this loophole can be closed by September 30th, 2024. That's an ambitious date, my friend, but hopefully that it can be done and that we can kind of just move on. So thank you again for this bill.
Seeing no more debate, Representative Fabricio, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members of the committee, for indulging us with this time to listen to the bill. It's an important bill. It's a small loophole. I think we close it. If we can close one cold case and bring closure to one family, I think that'll be worth it. So I ask you to support the bill. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Fabricio. Having closed on his bill, Ben, please call the roll on HB 533 and announce the vote.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Baker?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Tracy Davis?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Garcia? Gottlieb?
Yes.
Jock?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Plakin?
Yes.
Rayner?
Yes.
Silvers?
Yes.
Stark? Stark? Representative Tuck has been excused.
Yes.
Yarkoski? Chair Trino?
Yes.
16 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Show HB 533 reported favorably.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Next, we'll have HB 117, Disclosures of Grand Jury Testimony by Representative Gossip-Sibin. You're recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Chair. This bill is a simple and concise bill that seeks to open grand jury files sealed in Palm Beach County in 2006 and 7. This legislation amends Florida statutes to give judiciary the option to disclose certain grand jury testimony in the following very narrowly tailored manner. Disclosure of grand jury testimony must be court ordered. The subject of the grand jury testimony is deceased. The inquiry related to the criminal and sexual activity involving minors must be present. And the state attorney in the circuit where the grand jury testimony was taken is provided notice of this request. The greatest example of this need is the 2006 grand jury testimony of Jeffrey Epstein in Palm Beach County, my home county. The public and victims need to know if the prosecutors steered the jury correctly or away from indicting Epstein on more severe charges. They interviewed one out of 40 victims after a two-year investigation by law enforcement. And that, sir, is the bill.
Thank you. Members, questions on the bill? Seeing no questions on the bill, we have an amendment on the bill, barcode 789035. Representative, you are recognized to explain your amendment.
Thank you, Chair. This amendment clarifies the definitions and it reduces the penalty to keep this in line with other offenses currently on the books.
Thank you. Members, questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions on the amendment, we have any public testimony on the amendment? No public testimony. Members, we're in debate. Anyone wishing to debate? Seeing no debate, Representative, you're recognized to close on your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Florida has a chance to fill the missing chapters of this story. I lived in the county 23 miles away from this incident. The public has a right to know. And with that, sir, I close.
Having closed on her amendment, if you're in favor of adoption of the amendment, signify by saying yay. Opposed, say no. By your vote, the amendment is adopted. Back on the bill as amended. Is there any public testimony on the bill? Okay, we have Matthew Forrest, clerk of the Circuit Court, comptroller of Palm Beach County, waving in support. We have Barney Bishop, Florida Smart Justice Alliance, waving in support. We have no further public testimony. Members wishing to debate on the bill? Ranking member? No. Okay. Seeing no debate, Representative Gossett Sedman, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Wave close.
Having wave closed on her bill, Ben, please call the roll on HB 117 and announce the vote.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Baker?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Bracey Davis?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Garcia? Gottlieb?
Yes.
Jock?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Plakin?
Yes.
Rayner?
Yes.
Silvers? Yes. Stark?
Yes.
Representative Tuck has been excused. Yarkoski? Yes. Chair Trunau?
Yes.
16 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Show HB 117 reported favorably.
Thank you.
Next up, we have HB 1131 Online Sting Operations Grant Program by Representative Temple. Representative, you are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, Ranking Member, and other members. This bill is all in the title. This bill will set up a grant for our local law enforcement to target attacks on our young people. I'm proud of the work that we continue to do to protect our students, our children in the state, and this bill will continue to help our law enforcement to protect them online. That is the bill.
Having presented this bill, members, questions on the bill? Seeing no questions, there are no amendments. Is there any public testimony? We have Barney Bishop, Florida Smart Justice, waving in support. Seeing no other public testimony, members wishing to debate on the bill. Seeing no debate, Representative Temple, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Wave closer.
Having wave closed, Ben, please call the roll on HB 1131 and announce the vote.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Baker?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Bracey Davis?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Garcia? Gottlieb?
Yes.
Jock? Michael?
Yes.
Plakin?
Yes.
Rayner?
Yes.
Silvers?
Yes.
Stark?
Yes.
Representative Tuck has been excused. Yarkoski? Chair Trunau?
Yes.
15 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Show HB 1131 reported favorably.
Thank you, sir.
Next up, we have HB 801, Alzheimer's Disease and Related Dementia Training for Law Enforcement Officers by Representative Buchanan. Representative, you are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, members of the committee. For those of you that are not aware, by 2025, there'll be 720,000 Floridians living with Alzheimer's disease. This disease can cause people confusion with very familiar things and places. It is estimated that 6 in 10 people inflicted by this disease will wander at least once over the course of the disease, increasing the likelihood of interactions with law enforcement. HB 801 intends to help provide law enforcement the tools and resources to address individuals living with Alzheimer's. The bill specifically creates an optional Alzheimer's and related dementia continuing education course for law enforcement officers through FDLE in consultation with the Department of Elder Affairs. The training must include interacting and communicating with persons with dementia, recognizing signs and symptoms, employing alternatives to physical restraints, and identifying signs of abuse. That is the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, sir. Questions on the bill? Representative Gottlieb, you're recognized.
Thank you, thank you, Chair. Rep, I support the bill. I just have a question. I know we already have CIT training, crisis intervention training for officers, for those with mental health and drug addiction. Is this not I mean, I guess it's not, but is it not already included with those officers and the 40 hours that they get?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Gottlieb, thank you for that question. There may be some crossover. I can look into that and certainly circle back with you. This would be something that would be specifically addressing Alzheimer's and those related, the dementia related with Alzheimer's.
One final?
Follow up.
If there is a crossover, would you consider adding autism spectrum disorders as well, because they can lead to dementia? And also, it's also another problem for law enforcement in the field that I think they could benefit from.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do believe, and it's not related to this bill, there may be already some other legislation that's been filed this session. I could be wrong about that. Regarding that, I'm happy to have a conversation with you or any other stakeholders that want to discuss that.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Chair.
Representative Stark, you're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair, Rep. Gottlieb, for bringing that up. And just for verification, I have filed the autism bill. It is a little bit different, but certainly we can have that discussion if you choose to. But it is in the process.
Thank you. Questions? Seeing no more questions, we have an amendment on this bill. Barcode 124267. Representative Buchanan, you are recognized to explain your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, this amendment makes a technical drafting error revision on line 9 and changes the effective date of the bill to October 1st, 2024 from July 1st, 2024. And that change was a result in having conversations with stakeholders.
Thank you. Questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions on the amendment, we have no public testimony. Members, we're in the debate. Any debate? Seeing no debate, Representative Buchanan, you're recognized to close on your amendment.
Waive close, Mr. Chair.
Having waived closed on the amendment and adoption of the amendment, signify by saying yay.
Yay.
All those opposed? By your vote, the amendment is adopted. Back on the bill as amended. Public testimony on the bill. We have Karen Murillo, AARP, waving in support. Priscilla Jean Loomis, for herself and her mother, a proponent. Wish to speak? You're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman Trunau, Vice Chair Barnaby, Minority Ranking Member Rayner, and committee members. Thank you for allowing me to address you today. My name is Priscilla Jean-Louis, and I am one of the many faces of Alzheimer's. I am here in strong support of HB 801. I am my mother Vera's primary caregiver, and also have the honor of caregiving for my grandmother who passed away in 2022, who also had Alzheimer's. My mother was diagnosed in 2017, and while navigating my caregiver journey, I have learned how critical Alzheimer's education and training are for any individual and professional within the dementia community. To learn communication strategies, how to handle behaviors, and de-escalation strategies are imperative when dealing with individuals with Alzheimer's. I cannot tell you the number of situations that could have been exacerbated with my mother if I had not myself sought training as her caregiver. One of the most common safety concerns for people with dementia is that they will leave the house and get lost. On two separate occasions, my mother wandered off from home, and thankfully, one of our neighbors saw her on both occasions and was able to get her back home safely, but this is not everyone's reality. Knowing that law enforcement have the training on how to handle those situations with those with Alzheimer's provides peace of mind. As someone, who has many friends and families in law enforcement, I want to make sure that Florida's finest have the necessary resources that they need to address situations with Alzheimer's individuals. Again, thank you for your time. I am my mother's voice, and I'm honored to speak on behalf of the over half a million individuals living with Alzheimer's in Florida. I ask for your favorable support. Thank you.
Thank you. Olivia Babis, Disability Rights of Florida, waving in support. Alex Anderson, Alzheimer's Association, waving in support. Barney Bishop, Florida Smart Justice Alliance, waving in support. We have no more public testimony. Members, we are in debate. Members wishing to debate on the bill? Seeing no debate, Representative Buchanan, you are recognized to close in your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll waive close.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Buchanan, having closed on his bill, Ben, please call the roll on HB 801 and announce the vote.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Baker?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Bracey Davis?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Garcia? Gottlieb?
Yes.
Jock?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Plakin?
Yes.
Rayner?
Yes.
Silvers?
Yes.
Stark?
Yes.
Representative Tuck has been excused. Yarkoski?
Yes.
Chair Truno?
Yes.
16 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Show HB 801 reported favorably. Thank you, sir. Next up, we have HB 1181, Juvenile Justice, by Representative Jacques. You're recognized to present your bill from your chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 1181 is a revamp of our juvenile justice statutes to add more accountability in the system. It does so by doing several things, and I'll highlight a few portions of it. There is a focus on juvenile gun crimes. For example, it will upgrade a minor in possession of a firearm from a first-degree misdemeanor to a third-degree felony. We also look at detention and supervision of release in the court system. Now, a court will be required to order a youth to secure detention until an adjudicatory hearing for specified serious offenses involving possession of a firearm is heard. And we also changed the civil citation program to a delinquent citation program. So that's the name will change from civil citation to delinquency citation. This is the diversion program, and it clarifies that firearm offenses are not eligible for a delinquency citation. We also take a look at contraband coming into residential facilities and all sorts of facilities into the Department of Juvenile Justice oversees. It eliminates post-commitment probation as a community supervision tool, which is very bureaucratic, and instead replaces it with a conditional release system where the department will have more leverage to immediately hold a youth accountable if they are committing more crimes once they are out of supervision or out of the residential facility. Also look at things regarding firearm offending education. Educational records will now be admissible in court to see if youth are compliant with the terms and conditions of their court-ordered probation. And we also add some provisions regarding driver's licenses, suspensions, and so forth for offenses. That is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Having presented his bill, questions? Members, questions on the bill? Seeing no questions, there is one amendment, barcode 582665. Representative Jacques, you're recognized to explain your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment just makes technical, non-substantive changes to the bill. It maintains consistent terminology throughout the bill and deletes unnecessary duplicative provisions.
Questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions. Rep. Gottlieb, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I think I figured out the question that I had. If you look at line 50, it refers you to line to subsection 3, which I believe would then be on the previous page, page 2. And at line 29, it's 1, and line 34, it's 3. I kept reading it. It should really be a 2, not a 3. So I think there's a Scrivener's error in the bill on the strike all. So I think I figured that out, but I want to point that out. Am I correct that that's a mistake?
You're recognized.
Can you repeat the line number?
Sure. Line 50 says a minor who violates subsection 3. And then if I assume that subsection 3 on the first page, but it goes, and unless I'm misunderstanding it, subsection one is at line 29. There is no subsection two, so subsection three is at line 34.
Okay.
So I'm trying to figure out what is exactly subsection three, or if that's a Scrivener's error.
Subsection three starts at line 34.
So may I ask, where is subsection two?
It's not being amended by the bill.
Okay, so that's subsection two. It's very confusing. Is what's already in statute under 790 point? I guess I'm confused by that, but I'll talk offline about it. May I have another question then, sir?
Follow up, you're recognized.
Rep. Jacques, if I understand correctly, your bill prohibits a juvenile from being released for any gun offense?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So there's a presumption that there is a danger to the community and they will be held in detention until that adjudicatory hearing. And unless the judge their findings in writing that this youth does not pose a danger to the community.
Follow up, Representative Jacques Gottlieb.
Thank you, sir. Is there still a probable cause hearing the day following arrest or the day of arrest?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question. It does not change anything that currently occurs when an arrest occurs. It simply gives a presumption that the youth poses a danger to the community. And if they don't, the judge has to put that in writing.
One final, if I may.
You're recognized.
And Rep. Shocks, when you say the adjudicatory hearing, you're talking about the final disposition of the case, which could be months after the initial detention?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative, for the question. Yes, that is the hearing that I'm referring to, but the bill also specifies that they will be, after 60 days, the court is required to hold a review every 7 days to determine if the youth should remain in secure detention.
Thank you, Chair.
Questions? Questions on the amendment? Seeing no more questions on the amendment, we have any public testimony on the amendment? We have none on the amendment. Members, we are in debate on the amendment. You're recognized.
If we don't debate now, do we debate later on?
Well, we will have the opportunity to debate.
I'll shut up now, then. Thank you.
Seeing no debate, Representative Jacques, you are recognized to close on your amendment.
Waive close.
Having waived close, all those in favor of adopting the amendment say yay. Any opposed, no. By your vote, the amendment is adopted. Back on the bill as amended. Is there any public testimony on the bill? We have public testimony on the bill. Matthew Gorsh. Pardon me for butchering the name, Gorshkowski. And wish to appear, you're recognized.
Hi, my name is Matthew Gorholski. I'm a student at Rollins College, and usually I write speeches before testifying before a committee. I mean, that's the average thing to do. But I think when we look at things like grooming, I have a history.
This is not the bill.
Which one?
This is juvenile.
Oh, I didn't sign off on that one. Sorry, I was outside. I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you. Next, we have Christian Miner from Florida Juvenile Justice Association, waving in support. Ashley Richardson, Florida Public Defenders Association, waving in opposition. Jennifer Pritt, Florida Police Chiefs Association, waving in support. Matthew Dunnigan, Florida Sheriff's Association, waving in support. John Arguello, promoting self wish to speak? You're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman. As a school board member and hearing officer for expulsions, I'm very familiar with the delicate balance involved in extending mercy and discipline in order to bring about an opportunity for a young person to reach their potential. However, I'm even more familiar as one of those young men who desperately needed redemption himself. I'm going to repeat something I tell all those young men and women who appear before me. I always had to pay full price for my mistakes. I never had the benefit of a sympathetic system, which found every excuse for my bad acts on my behalf, especially ones based on my ethnicity or socioeconomic circumstances, which is so common today. Also, as a school board member, I have watched the movement take place and grow in the education system, although it resembles more of a cancer that brings about the death of character than it does a movement that brings about justice. I'm speaking of the trend to come up with reasons for our minors to avoid consequences at all costs, even when it means victimizing everyone else and destroying the educational environment. This bill is not addressing minor infractions and momentary lapses. It is addressing the most serious decisions made in someone's life at that stage, especially those concerning picking up the terrifying habit of the incorporation of a tool of slaughter in their bad decisions. This bill is a bill of conviction. It is a line in the sand by our legislators stating that we will not be a state that tolerates the notion of juvenile weapon use as a multiplier in bad life decisions, a facilitator in crime, or as a prop in a social media identity. And I'm a proponent of this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, we have Chancellor Teal waving in support. Well, Florida Department of Juvenile Justice. Tim Parson, Lutheran Services, Florida. Opponent. We have Aaron Wyatt, Florida Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers, waving in opposition. Jonathan Weber, SPLC Action Fund, waving in opposition. We have Barney Bishop, Florida Smart Justice Alliance, waving in support. If you'd like to speak, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Smart Justice supports this bill. It's an excellent bill. I can tell you I've spent 25 years supporting the Juvenile Civil Citation Program, so the fact that it's going to be changed, the name change is appropriate and will be helpful. I also sit on the board of Tallahassee Classical School, a public charter school, and I can tell you that the most fearful thing that happens for the 4 years that I've been on the board is somebody bringing a gun to the campus. We have to draw that line in the sand. It's not about victimizing other people, it's about ensuring that when I was chairman of the board, I told all of our parents, our one responsibility is the safety of your child. When you drop your child off at our school in the morning, you're gonna get your child back that evening. So, this is a strong message, but it's a message that needs to be made, that students are going to have the opportunity to learn and not be fearful about whether they're going to survive that or not. So please support this very good bill. Thank you. And thank you to the sponsor for him bringing this bill forward. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Members, we're in debate. Representative Gottlieb in debate.
Thank you, Chair. So, my concern sort of addresses what our last speaker just said, which is there's nothing about this, because no kid is going to understand or know the law prior to arrest, that's going to deter them from bringing a gun to school. But the overriding concern I have, and for those of you who don't work in the justice system, is this. Day one, you get arrested. So let's just take January 21st. By the 21st day, January 22nd, criminal charges are not yet even filed in most cases. State Attorney's Office has typically 21 days. So what that means is, for good cause shown, the state attorney is going to go in front of the judge and say, we believe we have a dangerous individual, we have probable cause, we need you to issue us another continuance to hold this child in custody. And whether we revisit that every 7 days or every 21 days by judicial order, It's just another opportunity to continue holding and holding and holding this kid until we get to the adjudicatory period, because any defense attorney who is going to fight vigorously for that child is then going to want discovery. So on the 21st day, criminal charges are filed. 14 days later, you have an arraignment. 14 days after that, you get discovery. So now you've got the defense attorney going in and saying, I need more time. Well, if you need more time to prepare your case for trial, we're going to hold this potentially dangerous individual. We're now somewhere near the 60th day. And then in the priority of cases, you know, of course, I read the part of the bill that says the court is to prioritize this case. But in the priority of cases, you might have a kid that's been on home detention for 6 months and missing school. And I think that this body of law ignores the fact that the United States Supreme Court has said in Miller, Roper, and Graham that a juvenile's mind is capable of maturing, and we're ignoring that. And what we're doing is we're taking that child, we're not giving them the proper deterrent, we're incarcerating them, which is harming their brain to begin with, although I do think that Mr. Hall's doing a phenomenal job in the DJJ system. It's not a condemnation of him. And we've heard about all the advances they're making in education. This bill just misses the mark. I get it. It should be punitive. I don't want anybody to be harmed with a gun. I am a responsible gun owner. Mine are in a safe. They're locked up. But this is not the cure to a kid who's hell-bent on bringing a gun to school. He's going to do it anyhow. You're just going to hold him longer after he's done that. And it's not a deterrent. It really misses the mark on what the policy is aiming to do. And for that reason, I can't vote up on it.
Ranking Member Rayner, you are recognized.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. Rep. Jock, I did let you know that I had some concerns. Unfortunately, we weren't able to talk in depth as I would have wanted to before this committee hearing, but a couple of concerns. Have working in the criminal justice system as a defense attorney, still representing juveniles. One, I think my issue becomes that there's a mechanism that if a child has a gun and the crime is egregious enough, there's a mechanism called direct file. There's a mechanism that we can do that. I have concerns with holding a child in custody where it seems to be somewhat to me, and I may be reading the bill wrong and we can have a conversation about it, where it seems to be indefinite. I also have concerns that it kind of does not really allow the court to have discretion when it comes to this. I understand that there is a concern because I live in a district where kids run around with guns. I was getting some crabs with my aide. And we were in a neighborhood, we were at someone's house, and I saw two 13-year-olds with guns. So I understand that there is a need to balance safety and to make sure that these kids are not running around and being dangerous. But I also have a concern of, I don't know if this is necessarily the best way to do it. So I am willing, if you are willing to work with me, to have just more conversations about this and really kind of see where we can come to. I understand your intent. I don't think your intent is bad. I don't think your intent is in a place that is misguided. I just want us to maybe have a more robust conversation about it, because I do understand living in a district, this is a problem. This is a problem in Pinellas County for sure. You and I both have worked in Pinellas County in the justice system, both represent that county. And so I just want to make sure that this, we are addressing it in the best possible way. So today I would be a respectful no.
Seeing no other debate, Representative Schock, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, committee members, for your input on this very important bill that, again, brings accountability to our juvenile justice system. And I'll touch on what my colleague, Representative Gottlieb, mentioned about the deterrent effect and what we're doing to have proper deterrent. And I will say, you mentioned Secretary Eric Hall. I will echo what you said. He's doing an amazing job. There's plenty in our current juvenile justice system for diversion, for prevention, and deterrence. But there has to be accountability as well on the other end. And accountability can be a deterrent. So in the situation where a known youth is always known to be carrying around a firearm and have committed offenses before, if they are addressed early on, that may deter them from doing something else in the future, because these things escalate. Today is just, you know, riding the bike with the gun on your hip, you know, with your crew, thinking it's cool. The next day, you're in a convenience store using that gun. But if we had a strong measure when they were held and arrested for just the bike ride and they had a minor in possession of a firearm and something clicked, then maybe they wouldn't go into that convenience store. And Lord knows what's going to happen. Lord knows what's going to happen. And it might prevent that child from going to the school because it was addressed early on. So it does have a very strong deterrent effect. And currently, it's a slap on the wrist. I was talking to one of my colleagues. I forgot who it was. I think it was somebody in the criminal justice system, actually. And they said, that's an understatement, slap on the wrist, what occurs now. And so this really adds more teeth to make sure that public safety is upheld. But we're also not setting up these kids for failure, because if you think you can just keep getting away with it time and time and time again, one day they're going to be facing a prosecutor in the adult system. They are going to be direct filed, and there's not going to be a lot of options for these kids. And so being held up to 60 days and having the reviews afterwards is a minor inconvenience to probably save their life, because they might end up in prison for the rest of their lives. Representative Rayner mentioned our county, and that's true. There's a prevalent issue right now going on with youth, with guns and gun crimes. Certainly in my district, on Christmas Eve, not too long ago, you had two teenagers arguing over Christmas gifts. During the verbal altercation, one shoots his older sister dead right in front of her baby, and then the other brother, who also carries, shoots the other brother, sending him to the hospital. Tragic. And the thing of the matter is, these youth were known. It was not a surprise to anyone that they were known kids who rolled around the neighborhood carrying their firearms. And this issue culminated in our county with the death of, back in 2011, Officer Crawford, who was gunned down in St. Pete by a 16-year-old wannabe thug. And so this has to be stopped in the interest of public safety, and it has to be stopped in order to save the lives of these kids. And with that, I urge your favorable support.
Thank you, Representative Shocks. Having closed on his bill, Ben, please call the roll on HB 1181 and announce the vote.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Baker?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Bracy Davis?
No.
Brannon?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
No.
Jock?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Plakin?
Yes.
Rayner?
No.
Silvers?
Yes.
Stark? Representative Tuck has been excused. Yarkoski?
Yes.
Chair Trunow?
Yes.
14 yeas, 3 nays, Mr. Chair.
Show HB 1181 reported favorably. Next up, we have HB 937. Purple Alert by Representative Casello. Representative, you're recognized to.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Allowing this bill to be heard. Committee, in 2021, we passed legislation to create the Purple Alert. This alert, which you may have seen on the highway or come up on your phone, was inspired by someone named Joshua Marshall, who passed away in 2018. And if this was in place, it might have saved him. The Purple Alert functions similar to the Silver and Amber Alert, but serves many of those left out. Those with cognitive, developmental, or intellectual disability goes missing, and those whose disappearance is a credible threat of imminent danger or seriously bodily harm to themselves. HB 937 comes back with suggestions from the FDLE to fix some of the technical issues with the alert and align it closer with how the silver alerts are issued. This proposal requires a statewide purple alert to be issued only when an identifiable vehicle is involved. This includes activation of lottery terminals, dynamic message signs on state highways, and notifications to subscribers. For an alert with no identifiable vehicle purple alerts will be limited to the local distribution area where the person may be reasonably be. That is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for that. Questions on the bill? Members' questions? Seeing no questions, there are no amendments. Is there any public testimony on the bill? We have Bobby Smith, Florida Department of Law Enforcement, waiving in support. We have Barney Bishop, Florida Smart Justice Alliance, waiving in support. Seeing no other public testimony, members wishing to debate on the bill? Seeing no debate, Representative Costello, you are recognized to close on your bill.
We'll waive close, Chair.
Having waived close on his bill, Ben, please call the vote on HB 937.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Baker?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Bracey Davis?
Yes.
Brannon? Costello?
Yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Jock?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Blaken?
Yes.
Rayner?
Yes.
Silvers?
Yes.
Stark?
Yes.
Representative Tuck has been excused. Yarkoski?
Yes.
Chair Trino?
Yes.
17 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Show HB 937 reported favorably. Thank you. Next up, we have HB 1595, Controlled Substances, by Representative Plankin. You are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. Appreciate the opportunity to present HB 1595. The bill codifies the Florida Attorney General's temporary emergency rule, adding thioneptine to the list of Schedule I controlled substances. Thioneptine was previously sold at gas stations and products under the guise of treating brain function or treating anxiety, and has become known as gas station heroin. Over the past few years, it has become clear that the drug has been responsible for serious side effects, including respiratory depression, loss of consciousness, and even death. The FDA has not approved thioneptine for any medical use, and it was previously unregulated. When used in high doses, the effects are similar to an opioid and highly addictive, so the FDA is now issuing warnings as well. According to the Attorney General's office, 11 states total have banned thioneptine. That is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Members, questions on the bill? Seeing no questions, Representative Barnaby, you're recognized for a question.
I want to thank Representative Plankin for bringing this very good bill. Thank you for your vigilance.
Thank you.
I urge everyone to be up on the bill.
There are no amendments.
The answer is yes.
Public testimony on the bill. We have Jennifer Pritt, Florida Police Chiefs Association, waiving in support. We have Libby Guzzo, Office of Attorney General, waiving in support. Barney Bishop, Florida Smart Justice Alliance, waiving in support. Seeing no other public testimony, members wishing to debate on the bill. Seeing no debate on the bill, Representative Plankin, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Chair. Waive close.
Representative Plankin having closed on her bill, Ben, please call the roll on HB 1595 and announce the vote.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Baker?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Bracey Davis?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Costello?
Yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Jock?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Blaken?
Yes.
Rayner?
Yes.
Silvers?
Yes.
Stark?
Yes.
Representative Tuck has been excused. Yarkoski?
Yes.
Chair Trino?
Yes.
17 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Show HB 1595 reported favorably.
Thank you.
Next up, we have 1135, Lewd and Lascivious Grooming, by Representative Yarkoski. You are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Vice Chair Barnaby and Ranking Member Rayner and the committee. You know, every time I get a chance to speak regarding certainly public safety efforts, I always say that the most vital and fundamental function of government, first and foremost, has to be public safety, specifically law and order, because without that, everything else is not on solid ground. And I always say that within that silo, the most righteous work we could ever do here in Tallahassee is to work to protect our children. Today, folks, we are seeking to create the first ever in the nation statutory criminal definition for grooming and assigning punitive components to it as well. You know, folks, I look at this as last year we certainly created one bookend in this evil world of preying on our children with the bill that Representative Baker ran and passed, providing for capital punishment for those people that create this. I say all the time, there's the closest thing to the devil in human form are the people that do this. Today, we are essentially creating the other bookend, in my opinion. You know, we have lewd and lascivious behaviors, but candidly, that doesn't go far enough. It says here that it's estimated that in about half of all child sex abuse cases, this abuse is preceded by sexual grooming. Sexual grooming is a predatory process in which a perpetrator selects a victim, gains access, and isolates the victim, develops trust with the victim and other adults in the victim's life, desensitizes the victim to sexual contact and physical contact. Post-abuse, the offender may engage in maintenance strategies in order to facilitate future sexual abuse and to prevent disclosure. Why would we not stop this at that level before we violate the child with lewd and lascivious photographs, enticing, and worse yet, actually physically violating that child? We now know how these folks operate, we know what they do, and we know what their intent and their purpose is, and it is evil. And so, folks, today we present this to you and ask you to support this. So we can put, as I said, the bookends here and send a message that in Florida, at no point do you come to this state and attack our children, because we are going to take you down, we're going to arrest you, we're going to punish you, and ultimately, you will be put to death if you rape a child under 12. Mr. Chairman, that is the bill and there is an amendment.
Questions? Ranking Member, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know that there is a strike all, so I don't know maybe if my questions would be better just suited for the, let's just wait till the strike all, we'll get there. Because I feel like.
Okay.
Yeah.
There is an amendment, barcode 233873. Representative Yarkoski, you're recognized to explain your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This strike all amendment makes a couple important changes. Through working through this bill, we've uncovered some things, and we want to get it right. We're here to get it right, not for any one person, but for this issue. It clarifies, in order to be considered lewd and lascivious grooming, the adult must be preparing and encouraging the minor to engage in any unlawful sexual activity, sexual conduct, or sexual performance. This clarification will help to preclude lawful situations such as sex education instruction, medical treatment that might otherwise be unintentionally captured under the language in the original bill. It reduces the penalty from a second-degree felony to a third-degree felony in order to keep the penalty in line with the offenses that are currently in law. It adds definitions for the following terms to provide clarity as to what conduct is prohibited under the bill: inappropriate sexual communication or conduct, sexual activity, sexual conduct, and sexual performance. And that is the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Questions on the amendment? Ranking Member Rayner, you're recognized.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. And Rep. Yarkoski, thank you so much for our conversation. And thank you for your strike all. Want to just kind of get some clarification on some of the terms that you have. When you are thinking about enticing versus preparing, can you kind of share with me what the difference is in that?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Ranking Member, thanks for the question. You know, I've done some research on this word preparing, because this has come up several times from all kinds of folks that I have tremendous respect for on both sides of the aisle here. And there is no real precedent that I can find other than to say that judges and state attorneys and detectives, ultimately, you know, judges make these determinations every day in the court of law as to, is there a pattern of behavior here? We are not looking for isolated incidents, and we're certainly not trying to entrap or put anyone in a corner here. If you are consistently, and I would say at least two or more times, doing things that are inappropriate, unethical, in the shadows, if you will, like don't tell your parents, mm-hmm. I could do this and that, we could say this and I'll go do, things like that are just not appropriate. And that is a pattern, whether it's in physically in person, saying things, doing things, whatever. So, and I would say for enticing, I mean, that is in code and in statute, I mean. Mm-hmm. You know, if they're directly petitioning that person, hey, come to my office and we can have sex and no one will know, that to me is enticing, but it which is already covered in law. So I think the preparing part is certainly, you know, something that we're governed or that we're looking to get a hold of here in prior to the enticement.
Ranking Member, you have a follow-up?
Yes, thank you so much, Mr. Chair. And Rep. Yarkoski, thank you for the answer to that question. And I think when we are looking at lines 25 and 26 of your amendment, you say, use the phrase, any unlawful. And can you just, I want to make sure that we're reading this correctly. Is it any unlawful sexual activity, any unlawful sexual conduct, or any unlawful sexual performance? Is that your intent to encapsulate all of that, all of those three areas I just mentioned? So any unlawful sexual activity, any unlawful sexual conduct, and any unlawful sexual performance.
You're recognized.
Yes, and those all of those phrases, if you will, are defined in statute already, and we reference to okay. those. I believe it is part of the packet. If not, I have those definitions. I can give them to you, Vice Chair. Thank you.
Follow up, Ranking Member?
Yes, thank you so much, Mr. Chair. I think this may be my final follow-up. I don't know. And thank you so much, Rep. Yarkoski, for that answer. You and I talked offline a little bit. My concern is, based on things that are outside of your control and outside of your purview, the word grooming and how that word has been used to attack groups of people. So would you be open to an amendment that would clearly define what grooming is? Because my concern is that grooming has been used to attack LGBTQ families and people. So would you and Rep. Bankson be open to having an amendment and a conversation to make sure that we can get this right and that all children in the state of Florida, all of them, are protected when it comes to sexual predators?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Vice Chair. Ranking Member. The answer is absolutely. You know, we're here to get it right, okay? And we have to hear everything. And I can tell you that through this process, last session, one of my best memories was working across the aisle with you all on a very important a bill in this exact silo. To be honest, so absolutely, and I welcome that, and I thank you for your interest in that, and I. Of course, we always have something to learn. Sometimes a teacher, always a student, right? So thank you for the offer.
Question, Representative Bracey Davis, you're recognized.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. So I too have questions about the words preparing or encouraging. And if we could, just for clarity's sake, would the handing out of condoms to minors be considered preparing or encouraging? Perhaps at a health fair.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks for that question. That's actually a great question. And in my mind, the answer would probably be no if it's in a mass situation, people are at an event, parents know they're there and they're handing them out. You know, that to me is not a pattern in succession or otherwise, unless the person is handing it to them and saying, hey, remember when we talked about this? Now you can, you know, that would then fall into, giving out condoms to the masses at an event, to me, that's not grooming. That is a separate situation.
Questions, members? Seeing no questions, we have no public testimony on the amendment. Are there any members wishing to debate on the amendment? Seeing no debate, Representative Yarkoski, you recognize the closing of your amendment.
I'll waive close.
Having closed on his amendment for the adoption amendment, signify by saying yay. All those opposed say no. By your vote, the amendment is adopted. Back on the bill is amended. Is there public testimony on the bill? We have some public testimony on the bill. Aaron DiPietro, Florida Family Policy Council. Proponent, waiving in support. John Arguello, waiving in support. John Labriella, Christian Family Coalition of Florida. A proponent, wish to appear?
Yes.
You're recognized.
Good afternoon, Chair and committee members. My name is John Labriola with the Christian Family Coalition, and we rise in strong support of this bill. This bill does make Florida, as the sponsor said, makes Florida a pioneer in this area by defining the crime of lewd and lascivious grooming. And what it does, very importantly, is it allows the state to step in before that pattern of behavior leads to an actual physical sexual abuse and assault scenario. So, and highlighting the need for this very important bill just this week, as many of you probably heard, the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office conducted a sting operation where 123 individuals were arrested on human trafficking related charges. And as Representative Yarkoski just noted, most cases of sexual assault, including human trafficking, which I know this committee is very concerned about, it's a growing problem in Florida, start with grooming. So the sooner that we can intervene in these cases, I believe we will help to bring down and finally get our hands around the issue of human trafficking. So again, we thank you for your upvote and commend the sponsors again. Appreciate it.
Thank you. John Harris Mariner, Equality Florida, opponent, wish to speak? You are recognized.
Thank you, Chair and members. My name is John Harris Maurer, and I'm the Public Policy Director for Equality Florida. Child abuse is real and devastating. Our concern is that as written, this bill risks confusing what grooming actually is and potentially trivializes its seriousness. Respectfully, and I heard the sponsor's intent here, which we greatly appreciate, our concern is that as written, the bill does not yet match the sponsor's intent. We would appreciate an opportunity to work with the sponsor, and I apologize I didn't have a chance to approach you before this, to work on some of that language, as we've heard a willingness to do so. Our fear is that it could threaten to restrict information crucial to preventing STDs and unwanted pregnancies for minors and threaten to deny them certain access to information. So we look forward to seeing this bill improved and hopefully reach a point that we can change our current opposition. Thank you.
Thank you. Bonnie Patterson James, representing self, waiving in opposition. Jennifer Pritt, Florida Police Chiefs Association, waiving in support. Ryan Kennedy, Florida Citizens Alliance, waiving in support. Grolski, an opponent, wishes to appear. Waiving opposition. Randy McNone, representing self. A proponent of the bill. Barney Bishop, Florida Smart Justice Alliance. Wishes to speak, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I won't be long. I want to thank the representative for bringing this very good bill. Let me just be clear, this is great for Florida to be the first in the nation to do this, but let's also be clear that this isn't about providing information. This is about patterns of behavior, and this is about protecting some of the most fragile people we have in our society, our children. So please be up. Florida Smart Justice supports this bill, and we hope you will too. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Members, we are now in debate. Ranking Member Rayner, you are recognized.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. And first, I want to preface my comments. Rep. Koski, in this process, the only thing we really have is our word. And one thing I've come to respect about you is that you are a man of your word. You will do the thing and work with us. So I am very hopeful and very and know that you will work to make sure that all concerns are allayed. And I appreciate working with you and appreciate that about you in this process. So as I did share with you before committee, I will be a respectful no now, and I kind of alluded to my reasonings in my question, really just about the grooming part. Obviously, y'all know how I feel about protecting children. Please support HB1. You know how I feel about protecting children. However, I just want to make sure that there are no unintended consequences, specifically with the grooming piece, specifically with LGBTQ families and children, and specifically that language having been used by folks to weaponize and criminalize a subset of our citizens here in the state of Florida. And so I just want to make sure that we can make sure that that information is tight, because there is real grooming that is happening, right? There's real grooming that is having devastating effects on our children, that's having devastating effects on families. But that grooming is not LGBTQ people, LGBTQ families. And I just want to make sure that we're really tight on that language. And so for that, I will just be a respectful no, but I appreciate your commitment to work with me and my colleagues in this process, because that's all we have in this process. And we want to make sure that we get this right. We want to make sure that all of our children are protected. So thank you just for your willingness to do that.
Representative Gottlieb, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Rep. Yarkoski, I want to compliment you on number one, how hard you're working on the bill, and number two, your willingness to come and speak to all of us. You and I spoke at length yesterday. I'm supporting your bill. I do hear the concerns of Equality Florida and some of my other members. I'm going to hear this bill twice more, and I know that you're going to work hard. And I know that you don't necessarily feel that those are realistic the way the bill is written, but perhaps you would consider putting something in there that strengthens their concerns that, you know, sex education and the dissemination of information, whether it be in public or private, that is not sexually prurient in terms of your grooming, so that we don't encapsulate those individuals who are trying to make us safer and not grooming in the way that you see it. So I look forward to working with you. It was a pleasure last session, and I know we'll get to a great place on this product as well.
Representative Jacques, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Yarkoski and Representative Banks, I want to thank you both for all the work you've put into this bill. I recall the early stages when you were trying to get language together, and we had conversations, and you didn't just have conversations with me. You were reaching out to all sorts of colleagues on both sides of the aisle, especially the legal minds here in the committee, just to try to get that language precise. And I think you've done such an amazing job on this particular issue that takes on the groomers. And here in the state of Florida, we are a law and order state, and you referenced Representative Baker's bill that now brings back the death penalty for these pedophiles. But that's great. But it would be great if they didn't do it in the first place. And this is what this bill does, right? It addresses the grooming to stop it at its roots. And as a former prosecutor, it's always sweet to get justice, but a lot of times I wish I didn't have to prosecute the case at all, because I wish the act didn't occur. And this bill will go towards that to make sure that these heinous acts do not occur. Thank you, sir.
Representative Bracey Davis, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I, too, will be down on this bill. Thank you for your reaching out across the aisle. And I am also looking forward to further conversations. I do think this bill is, some of the language is vague and subjective. The words preparing and encouraging concern me. So I'd love to have further conversations about that. While I know this is not question or answer time, I'd love for you to perhaps address in your close, at the risk of being redundant, that there's no intention to affect the curriculum of sexual education. Thank you.
Seeing no other debate, Representative Yarkoski, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm going to say just a couple quick words and hand it to my prime co-sponsor, Rep. Banks. And first of all, absolutely, Representative Davis, that's not the intent here at all. We're not trying to, again, back anyone to a corner and entrap anyone in any of that kind of stuff. That's not the case. And we had extensive conversation with the policy folks on that. And I even read in there that, you know, that was not the intent. Education, you know, arts, things like that, you know, we're not trying to do that. This is a succession of continual activities with one intent. It's not isolated at an event with a prophylactic, or it's not, you know, they showed up here and there was education. That's not the thing. This is people that have a mission, and they are preying on them, and that's what we're trying to stop. And I think Rep. Banks Bernie Jock said it best. I wish I never even had to prosecute these cases, and perhaps the folks that are doing this will now go, I can't roll in the shadows anymore. I can't do any of this stuff, because they know as long as they don't ask a question, they won't cross that line for lewd and lascivious. Now we're taking that out. And Senator Dennis Baxley, one of my mentors and dear friends, always says to me, Rep, sometimes our job is just to turn on the lights, let the Holy Spirit in. And I feel like this is a big part of that. We're turning on the lights in the shadows of where these folks are operating, and it leads to the next thing, and then the next thing, and on we go. And now we're prosecuting a death penalty in my district, in my county right now, of a man raping his 8-year-old daughter. And it's disgusting. So that is what we're trying to stop here in the early phases of this, not to try to attack any virtues or any folks in our community that live a different lifestyle. That's not the point. And I want to say, before I turn it over to Rep. Bankson, that without the help of Commissioner Mark Glass of the FDLE, Deputy Commissioner David Binder, and specifically Special Agent in Charge of Sex Crimes, Mike Duffy, who's sitting back here today, I promise you, you don't want to know what those people have to do. See? And people think of the videos, they think of the images. I promise you, the sounds will make your blood boil. So that is what we're coming after here today, is we're not going to let it get past that stage. And so the devil, the Bible says in the book of John, the devil's job is to rob, kill, and destroy. We rob these kids of their innocence, we kill their spirit, and we destroy their lives every single time this happens, and folks around them. So that's what we're here to do today. That's what this bill is attempting to do. And I absolutely have a willingness at any time to sit down with you all, because I'm here to learn and I'm here to get it right. And that's what we're going to do. And so with that, I'd like to hand over to my co-sponsor, Rep. Bankson, real quick, and then we'll close from there. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And thank you, Rep. Yarkoski. This has been a passionate thing for both of our hearts. And we've talked about this. The bottom line is, this is about protecting innocence. There's something when we first, this first came up that just rose up inside of me. It's just this clarion call to me, is innocence once lost can never be restored. The trajectory of a child's life, it's like rocket science. We use that phrase. So this isn't rocket science. This to me is very clear. And I believe everyone's heart is united in where we want to get with this. And that is to protect those children. And those children at the beginning of their life, there's no limit to their potential. But when someone comes in that has a design that is not for the good of the child, but to use that child for their own prurient nature, it destroys something inside that can never be brought back. You know, there's a famous passage in the Gospels where Jesus was walking among the crowd. And his disciples were there, and little children began to come up, and they were shushing them away. No, don't bother him. Don't bother him. He's busy. And many times children are dismissed in that measure. But Jesus gave us his heart and his example. He says, no, allow them to come here. Very interesting. Two things happened. Number one, he stopped. He laid a hand on them and blessed them. This isn't about stopping people who have the good intent to protect our children through education, through good health, through those measures. But then he gave a warning, which is the heart of God, that said, woe to those who would offend such a little one. Better to have that millstone hung around their neck and cast in the sea, but then that they should offend the little one. So on one hand, he's encouraging the blessing of them, the influence of those who are there to protect them. But on the other hand, warning against those whose heart and nature is to destroy them for their own purposes. This to me really is, I like to simplify things. What is the purpose? Thank God for our law enforcement and what they do. And the things that we witnessed are just unconscionable of what they are facing. And this is a tool to allow them to keep this from going to that level that that child is irreparably damaged. So this is about helping the good guys stop the bad guys. And so we want to get this right and make sure the language is clear, because we don't want to catch someone who is truly innocent and who truly cares about children. We do want to stop those whose hearts are bent on devious manners that are against our laws, that are against things that are healthy and wholesome and good. We want to stand up. And so I ask each of you to consider, please, to support this good bill as we go forward.
Thank you. Rep. Yarkoski and Rep. Bankson have been closed on their bill. Ben, please call a roll on HB 1135 and announce the vote.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Baker?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Bracy Davis?
No.
Brannon?
Yes.
Casillo?
Yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Jock?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Plakin?
Yes.
Rayner?
No for now.
Silvers?
Yes.
Stark?
Yes.
Representative Tuck has been excused. Yarkoski?
Yes.
Chartruno?
Yes.
15 yeas, 2 nays, Mr. Chair.
Show HB 1135 reported favorably. Thank you. That concludes the agenda for today's meeting. Members, if there is no further business, Representative Plankin moves that we rise without objection. The meeting is adjourned.